I think I'm entitled.
You want answers.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
The FBI is set to bring a document to Capitol Hill today that allegedly implicates Joe Biden in a criminal bribery scheme from his time as vice president. The chairman and ranking member of the House Oversight Committee will be able to view it in a secure room, but House Republicans are still keeping the pressure on FBI Director Christopher Wray.
We have a responsibility oversight. If they do not comply and allow every person on oversight, Republican or Democrat, that's their responsibility as members of Congress, to see this document, I will move contempt charges against the director.
That is House Speaker Kevin McCarthy making it clear. We're not just going to show it to top level Democrats and Republicans. Everyone on the House Oversight Committee, regardless of their affiliation, will have a right to see this Form 1023, in which it's alleged a source to the FBI that has been used repeatedly in the past and verified in the past, claims that Joe Biden, while vice president, took $5 million in bribery money in one form or another for a favor for a foreign national. That would be an act of treason, if true. Thank you for joining us. This is June 5, 2023. And as usual, during the noon hour, we are doing a live Rumble feed. You can go to rumble.com, enter in Larry Connors USA. That'll take you to our platform. Or you can enter News Talk STL. We're also on that platform. We like you to watch whichever one you care for. And then we always welcome your comments. You can subscribe for free. We do not sell your information, and you'll always get it in case you missed it. You can always pull it up later as a Rumble podcast and or an audio podcast. You can find both at LarryConnorsUSA.com. So we're waiting to see about how this is going to be handled once it's turned over to House Oversight Chair James Comer. FBI Director Wray had met with him last week and said, I will deliver that to you. But it's going to be for select eyes, and Comer's going to be in a skiff. That's basically one of those highly sensitive rooms where nothing can go in or out without it being checked. Can't take notes, can't take your cell phone. You can go in and look at the report. You can't make copies of it, things of this nature. But Comer is one of the ones to see it, and other leaders on the Democrat side in the House Oversight would as well. But Kevin McCarthy is making it clear every member of the House Oversight Committee should be able to see this document. Now, there's a report that Senator Grassley has already seen it, and we will get to that in just a moment, because what he can say and what he doesn't say might be telling as to how valid this is. But in the midst of all this, one member of the House Oversight Committee is making it very clear that if we're going to see this and really get something substantial out of it, then we might well be looking at something that goes much, much deeper than this one event, because that is what everybody's been interested in ever since the Hunter Biden laptop became public. And all the information, all the nastiness, the dirty, everything exposed, gutted for everyone to see. And of course, you got to verify. It could just be a cokehead, as Hunter Biden often was, just rambling on, except there have already been numerous witnesses and documents coming forward proving various things that he alluded to. Bank records, for instance, those SARS reports, which House Oversight Committee Chair Comer has, as does Senators Grassley and Johnson as they continue their work on their side of the Congress. But Florida Congresswoman Anna Luna, who's a Republican, she's on the Oversight Committee, and she says there's a good reason to be very detailed about this inquiry.
over the last couple of months, House oversight, as well as the staff that helps us run the investigations, has proven that we've actually been able to provide evidence. You know, before there was speculation on the Ponzi scheme for influence peddling and also the personal enrichment of the Biden family. And now what we're finding is that these are no longer allegations, and we're creating a hard case. In my opinion, Maria, what we're seeing right now, if this is true, which I do believe that it is true in regards to Joe Biden receiving briberies and Hunter Biden, I do believe that this is grounds for impeachment. And so it's important that we continue to move forward to bring this to the American people, but also too that we, I think, do a house cleaning within our DOJ, because as you had stated earlier, they are protecting this family. The FBI is protecting the Hunter Biden family, and it's not okay.
No, it's not okay. And in fact, as you continue to look at all of this, we need more details, and we need to know exactly what's being covered up and who's in charge of the cover-up. And to that extent, Florida Congressman Corey Mills, Republican, he also says these documents we have now, what we have seen and we expect to receive, are vital.
These unclassified documents, which clearly alludes to having a over $5 million pay-for-play with then Vice President Biden and his Biden crime family, you know, this document, federal document 1023, should be provided to the entire oversight committee. This is a very similar tactic that you're seeing out of the Biden administration. I sit on the Armed Services Committee and the Foreign Affairs Committee. We are seeing the exact same thing from Secretary Blinken when it comes to our Foreign Affairs Committee and the dissent cables that was sent with regards to the Afghan botched withdrawal. So we are looking at probably not just holding in contempt the Christopher Wray, but also possibly Secretary Blinken. This is a continuation of not wanting to provide documentation to Congress, which is within our actual rules and responsibilities for oversight.
That is their duty, their mission. And again, that's Florida Congressman Corey Mills. I mentioned in the beginning that Senator Grassley has apparently actually seen the Form 1023 that Wray is delivering to Comer and going to be viewed only in a skiff. That reference to Senator Grassley and his ability to see it and claiming he saw it, you can go back to Margo Cleveland, with The Federalist. She put out a piece the other day I referred to, and let me just read her opening lines. Senator Chuck Grassley has already seen the FBI's lengthy summary of a confidential human sources claims that then-Vice President Joe Biden agreed to accept money from a foreign national to affect policy decisions. The Iowa Republican revealed that last week, and he pledged to make the FBI report public as soon as the Bureau complies with a congressional subpoena to deliver the copy of that 1023. Wray had been refusing to do so, but then he did meet with Congressman Comer last week, said, "I'll bring it to you, and you'll be able to view it in a skiff." That subpoena-related correspondence all indicate that the whistleblower, according to Grassley, without giving great detail about it, shows that intimate knowledge of the claims on the 1023 form. It was dated June 30, 2020, when Biden was vice president, alleging a bribe of $5 million. So we know the form exists. Grassley has seen it. He's already confirmed that, and what it means is that Grassley and Comer aren't simply taking the whistleblower at his word, that they know the document is there, they want to see it, they want it in their hands directly, and I don't know exactly how Grassley saw it, it's not made clear here, but all he says, it included, quote, a precise description of how the alleged criminal scheme was employed as well as its purpose. Now, again, Senator Grassley has clearly known these specifics for some time, but he doesn't like to rush to judgment. He's been allowing congressional investigators to run down the various leads that the FBI had already basically deep-sixed, such as the alleged scheme was executed and how it would point investigators to various people and entities involved. With Senator Grassley and Senator Johnson, have already run down some of those leads, but now they're going to step back and let Comer and his group take a good look at it. Again, Florida Congresswoman Luna says, look at the history of this administration. That tells you, should tell you, everything.
What's really alarming about this is, as we know, the FBI, one, has a mole in there that's advising Hunter Biden as to the investigations by the name of One Eye, which, in saying it, it sounds like it's something out of a James Bond movie, but unfortunately, it's true. And then also, too, I mean, my goodness, Maria, with the amount of evidence that's coming forward, it's scary to think that this guy that's currently sitting in the White House has become this corrupt, and it's really only doing one thing, and that's aiding and abetting the Communist Chinese Party. It's something that we as House Oversight, it puts all of us, I think, big targets on our backs, but we're doing right by the American people. This is nonpartisan. It should remain nonpartisan. But ultimately, we have to make sure that the DOJ and the FBI is being held accountable as well. And when they are trumping up charges, especially against whistleblowers who are bringing evidence forward to show that this family, that this administration, that this president is compromised, if we don't do our job, we are ultimately going to be responsible for there no longer being justice in this country.
And that is what we want, is justice. Now, she went not into a rabbit hole when she started rolling China into all of this. There's nothing I've seen so far that indicates China was part of this, quote, bribery scheme. And I caution you, and I strongly urge you to keep in mind, these are allegations, and until they're actually proven above and beyond what a whistleblower says or what was written on this Form 1023 by apparently a verified and vetted FBI informant, don't rush forward. Too many times that has happened on the other side, and I don't want to see us do the same thing. Now, there's something else that happened over the weekend that also ties to the FBI. He's not saying it, but what happened over the weekend with Chuck Todd? And remember what he had to say about the Durham report on the FBI?
Look, trust in the FBI is eroding left and right. Feels like we're in the moment that we need a real church committee, that this is a moment like when the J. Edgar Hoover FBI clearly was no longer helping the American people. There was a moment. It feels like we might be in one of those moments.
We might be in one of those moments where he's suggesting we need a church committee. That was Chuck Todd on Meet the Press shortly after the word came out that the Durham report, even in the words of CNN Jake Tapper, was devastating to the FBI. And here you had Chuck Todd, as you were hearing, say, you know, this is showing some real problems with the FBI. We might need to have a church committee. Now, put that against the backdrop of what happened this weekend. Chuck Todd suddenly announces, after 10 years as host of the Meet the Press NBC, he's leaving the program. Now, he won't actually leave until the end of summer, but he's announcing that he's leaving. Now, would that be tied because he made remarks that ran contrary to the basic state-controlled media narrative? You don't criticize the FBI. You criticize everybody that criticizes the FBI, beginning with everyone on the right. I'll remind you again, the church committee was set up at that time in the 70s, 75 actually, to look at our intel agencies and see where they were overstepping their bounds and authority. And Senator Frank Church of Idaho chaired that committee. But that was one of many looking into our intel communities because they were worried that these guys might be getting out of control. So when Chuck Todd made his remarks the other day that the FBI is damaged by this, and Jake Tapper said the Durham report shows it's devastating the FBI, did that set Todd up for the announcement he made just yesterday?
Welcome back. I have a personal announcement. Well, today is not my final show. This is going to be my final summer here at Meet the Press. It's been an amazing, nearly decade-long run. I'm pretty, really proud of what this team and I have built over the last decade, and frankly, the last 15 plus years that I've been here at NBC, which also includes my time as political director. I've loved so much of this job, helping to explain America to Washington and explain Washington to America. When I took over Meet the Press, it was a Sunday show that had a lot of people questioning whether it could still have a place in the modern media space. Well, I think we've answered that question and then some. We've taken Meet the Press from a single Sunday show to a distinct and important political franchise. From our daily show, Meet the Press Now, our magazine show, Meet the Press Reports, to our newsletters and podcasts, we've successfully expanded what makes Meet the Press special.
So he had great things to say about what he's accomplished. Didn't talk about that I'm being booted out or that they told me to move on. But I have to question that. And in fact, in our second hour on Rumble, it will not be on the air, but it will be on the Rumble live stream. We're going to look at that a little closer as to why Chuck Todd might really be leaving Meet the Press. Just because he decided 10 years, that's good. I can go now. Do you buy that story? I have a hard time buying it. Now, there's another story that's caught the attention of everyone and now quickly ramping up to conspiracy levels, and that was that private jet that flew over the nation's capital over the weekend, causing us to scramble fighter jets to escort it. And by escorting, I mean to get up and see what's going on with it. And they might well have had orders to shoot it down if they thought it was a threat. This was a private jet that ended up crashing near Raphine, Virginia, in the woods. And according to the responders, it was a grisly scene. Some recognizable pieces of wreckage. Nothing bigger than your arm, they said. It had hit the ground at a very steep angle, leaving a crater. They did find remains, human remains. There were four on board. It had missed its destination by 300 miles before plunging to the ground, taking off from Elizabethtown, Tennessee, headed for New York's Long Island MacArthur Airport, and then at some point did a basic U-turn and went back over some of the ground it had been, although this time it went right over the U.S. Capitol. And that's why suddenly when it entered Capitol airspace, fighter jets were scrambled, and they were rushing to the extent that they call sonic booms, which caused a lot of concern. Some are saying, did the booms bring down the jet? No, they didn't. The question is, was the pilot incapacitated? Did he have basically hypoxia, oxygen deprivation? We're going to get into that with my guest, Colonel Jack Jackson, Marine, retired. He knows these stories. Lock and load, ready on the right. I want to share something special with you. I've told you how Wellington Environmental works to keep hospitals, schools, businesses safe for their patients, students, clients, employees. Wellington can do the same for you. Perfect example. A relative went to the basement, almost knocked over by the smell. A sewer line had broken. A call to Wellington, a crew was dispatched. First thing, make the home safe. Then clean up the mess. Truly clean it up. Now, I'm telling you this because I want the best for you. Wellington Environmental. Here's the number, 314-644-4930. 644-4930. AAA rating with the Better Business Bureau. 644-4930. Wellington Environmental. Your world. Cleaner, better, safer. Be well with Wellington. When I endorse a product, I want it to be a quality product I put my name behind. That's why I'm recommending when it comes to windows, you go to Renewal by Anderson. Start by calling 1-877-WINDOWS. 1-877-WINDOWS. They will start by finding out where you're losing energy, driving up costs in summer and winter. They have the nation's best warranty. 1-877-WINDOWS or go to their website, rbastl.com. rbastl.com.
You can text Larry right now at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
And we're down, we go, go, go.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Welcome back. And on this jet, this private jet that crashed after flying over the top of D.C., and there was a reason to scramble fighter jets to see what was going on, making sure it was not going to be a threat to the Capitol, the White House, or anything else. You have to keep in mind that on board, in addition to the pilot, the owner of the plane, that's Florida-based, registered to Encore Motors of Melbourne, John Rumpel, is telling the Washington Post on board was his entire family, his daughter, grandchild, and her nanny, and of course, in addition to the pilot. So why did it suddenly go, this Cessna Citation, on a flight from Elizabethtown, Tennessee on Sunday, headed for Long Island's MacArthur Airport, then over New York, Long Island, flew a straight path, turning at that point over Long Island, and then going right back over the top of D.C. before it hit terrain in Virginia around 3:30 that afternoon. Colonel Jack Jackson, Marine retired fighter pilot, joining us. Colonel, glad to have you back on board, sir.
Oh, good afternoon, Larry, and thanks for having me.
So the first thought is you go back to the Payne Stewart crash where the pilot's incapacitated with loss of oxygen. The fighters that flew alongside this jet did not report any fog on the windshield that might indicate that there was a loss of oxygen on board the plane. Your thoughts to begin with?
Well, my early on thoughts would be it's some sort of lack of oxygen, but I don't know how high the airplane was. You have to have a certain altitude to start losing oxygen. And, you know, people can go to Denver or climb mountains at 10,000 feet and still have, you know, adequate breathing air. So if he passed, how high was he and how fast did they come down? Or was there another failure of some sort, carbon monoxide? I heard the report that the pilot looked like he was hunched over, and they did not respond to any radio calls. I did not hear if they saw inside of the cabin of the airplane.
No, that's
so you have
correct.
Two. Pardon?
Yeah, that's correct. They only could see the cockpit, and they did report that he was hunched over, so they could see it was not fogged over. Now, two things. Let me break down very quickly. It's on a path. May or may not have been, I'm almost certain it was on autopilot at that point, but then it does a turn, which looks like it would have been a controlled autopilot turn as opposed to the pilot flying it, and then begins to go back the other way. So if he had hypoxia, if he was deprived of oxygen, we've discussed this before, that he might have been thinking he was doing one thing when he's doing something different, assuming he was even cognizant of what he was doing.
Well, that's correct. Just a little footnote on that, Larry. When we were doing hypoxia training to fly high-performance fighters, we found out that useful consciousness, now useful, not dead, is about 37 seconds when you're at an altitude of 30,000 feet. And what that means is you may be cognizant, but you're not functioning properly. You know, we tried it, and we were in a pressure chamber, and you thought you were writing your name, and in reality, you were marking a pen mark on your arm. So you do things that are not there. And along that line, that's when you go on an airlines, and I say in the unlikely event of a depressurization, they tell you to put your mask on first and then assist the others.
Because you might not be able to otherwise, yeah.
That's correct.
Now, the other thing is when they scramble these fighters, two F-16s for sure were scrambled alongside. Is it your thought that they probably had orders that if it begins to look like it's going to actually go into D.C., direct into the Capitol or the White House to take action? What would your thought be?
Yes. When you're scrambled. And it's an emergency and scrambled, you know, you're on a hot pad. I've been there, and you're basically in your airplane. And when they scramble you, you're airborne in very, very short period of time. Everybody's cleared out of the way. All the other planes are cleared and you get there in a hurry. And, you know, we had the tragedy of 9/11. So there's no doubt in my mind, if that had been a deliberate move, they would have taken the appropriate actions to alleviate something that occurred on September 9/11.
Now, I have not seen any numbers. You raised a question about the altitude. I haven't seen anything confirming altitude, but I have seen flight tracking showing a rapid spiraling descent at a rate of more than 30,000 feet per minute. That is extreme acceleration.
Well, that's right. Now, what happened, maybe happened, you have a procedure that you train for in airplanes like that, and I've been through that training, and if you're up at altitude and you have rapid decompression, the immediate action emergency is the first thing you do. The very first thing is put on your oxygen mask and turn it on. You don't try and fly the airplane. You get that mask on because if you pass out, you're useless. Doesn't matter.
Right.
And then you go through the rest of the procedure to make sure your radios are working. You get down in a hurry, distribute the oxygen mask for the passengers, and on it goes. But if that pilot was up at that high and the other pilot saw him and he did not have his mask on, that would be a big clue as to what actually happened.
I don't get the impression it was another pilot on board. I read that there were four on board. That would be the pilot, John, the owner, John Rumpel's daughter, grandchild, and her nanny. So apparently there was no other pilot on board. Now, that's the other thing. If he just had a health emergency and then either maybe was trying to deal with it using the auto control, and it's for the folks listening, you don't have to actually physically turn the plane. You just touch a little knob and begin to spin it to the heading you want to go to, and it will correct. And you look at the curvature on the signature track, it looks like it's a perfect turn, U-turn. So how do you think that would have been accomplished unless he intended to do it? Or let me put it this way. The autopilot was engaged when he made the turn, that he didn't intentionally turn to go back.
I don't think he intentionally made that turn to go back. The word operative word there in my mind is intentional.
Right.
He may have in his confusion,
right,
turn the knob to think he has to go back.
Right.
But after you get that oxygen, you do make a high-speed spiral descent, and you're taught how to do that. Now, if he spiraled down and...
Well, he was a long way. Yeah, he was a long ways from... He was over Long Island at that point. Didn't go in until he got over Virginia, the Montebello, Virginia, about 3:30 sometime afterwards. Now, the other thing, too, Jack, is that they didn't see a mask on the pilot, so he was incapacitated one way or the other, and no one else on the board would have known what to do. So they were just along for the ride, assuming they had not passed out because of carbon monoxide.
Or if he passed out, they passed out.
Yeah, if he did, then they all did to that extent. Now,
yes, you go back to the Payne Stewart thing. You know, the pilots passed out, but so did Payne Stewart.
Yeah, and they followed that plane at the time basically all the way into South Dakota when it just ran out of fuel and went down. It's not clear from
correct
what I've seen that this plane actually ran out of fuel, because when you look at the speed it went down, it suggests that it's almost like it's being powered into the ground. Would you agree?
Exactly. I agree. There was something in the cockpit that made that pilot, whether he intentional or unintentional, and I do not know, that made him start that turn. And once that turn started, if he became incapacitated for whatever reason, that airplane is going to continue down. And he may have tried to do other things before he was totally incapacitated.
Yeah.
But it spiraled right into the mountains from a very high altitude.
Well, obviously, there's going to be a lot of investigation on it, and some conspiracy theorists already that, well, it was a planned attack that went wrong. I don't buy that. But Colonel Jackson,
no,
always, yeah, I agree with you. And Colonel Jackson, as always, I appreciate your time, sir.
Always, Larry, anytime I can help.
You bet. Colonel Jack Jackson, U.S. Marines, retired. Coming up, an Oklahoma senator reads a book to a panel on education, and the reaction, well, let me put it this way. They didn't like the book he read, and he didn't either. You want a beautiful lawn, but if you live by my motto, I don't do projects. So call the experts, Allen Outdoor Solutions. Lawn maintenance, landscaping, lighting, irrigation. Recent storms might have created some drainage issues. That's not good for your home. Get immediate help or a quote. Call my friend Steve Allen. 314-647-4800, 647-4800, AllenOutdoorSolutions.com, AllenOutdoorSolutions.com. If you're even thinking about buying a home, you need to contact Homestead Financial Mortgage. Get pre-approved. Jump ahead of others looking at the same house. Often you can close in as little as 15 days. Homestead Financial Mortgage can guide you and your realtor through the maze that slows down the process. Go to my website, easy to remember, larry.homesteadfinancial.com. My first name, larry.homesteadfinancial.com. This time of year, heavy rains, high winds, they can hit, and if you have any loose shingles, even the smallest hole in your roof, you're taking a major gamble with your biggest investment. I can tell you from personal experience, do not wait until you have water where it shouldn't be. Don't forget that John Beal has disaster crews, which can at least cover your roof until the damage can be fully repaired. Homeowner, business owner, call John Beal, 1-800-NEW-ROOF, 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
I have a book here in front of me called Our Skin that has been endorsed by NACI. And I'm going to read exactly what this book says. You guys might find it interesting. A long time ago, way before you were born, a group of white people made up an idea called race. They sorted people by skin color and said that white people were better, smarter, prettier, and they deserved more than everybody else. This would be taught if we socialize our pre-K system. This would be taught.
Do you disagree with that findings in the book?
1,000%.
1,000%. And the question came from Senator Bernie Sanders as he's listening to Oklahoma Senator Mullins. Going over a book that he said is being taught in schools. And he was reading this during an education proceeding, or hearing, I should say, on Capitol Hill. It was a hearing of the Senate's Health, Education, Labor, Pensions Committee. And then the Republican Senator, Mark Wayne Mullen, brought that up. I want to share with the midst of you, or rather in the midst of all of it, a response from MSNBC, Joy Reid, and her view on this. She began her blog remarks on it. Hearings on Capitol Hill sometimes include, let's say, odd moments. But then we saw something just straight up bizarre during this hearing when one Republican senator decided to go after a children's book. The shouty gentleman, that's the way she described him, the shouty gentleman, did you hear shouting? He just said, I want to read this, demanding to know whether it's better to teach Jesus Loves Me, a Christian children's song, or Our Skin, a first conversation about race, which is a, as she says, a children's book about race. And she points out that Mark Wayne Mullen, a former cage fighter turned Republican senator from Oklahoma, she said, I should also note he claims Cherokee heritage and pointed that out in the hearing. And then she says, it was kind of a dumb question enough, wasn't it? You wouldn't teach a Jesus song in a public elementary school because, well, it's not Sunday school, it's not church, it's a school. He wasn't saying necessarily that you would teach it. He said, which would you prefer? This book, as he's referring to and stating that white people decided that people would be divided by race, she goes on, and again, Joy Reid is claiming that from the historians of the Smithsonian National Museum of African American History and Culture, right, she's quoting, and I'm going to quote her, before the mid-1600s, there is no evidence that the English referred to themselves as being white people. This concept did not occur until 1613, when the English society first encountered and contrasted themselves against the East Indians through their colonial pursuits. Even then, there was not a large body of people who considered themselves white, as we know the term today. From about the 1550s to 1600, white was exclusively used to describe elite English women because the whiteness of skin signaled that they were persons of a high social class who did not go outside to labor. And it continues. Again, this is a Smithsonian statement she's reading. The term white did not refer to elite English men because the idea that men did not leave their homes to work could signal they were lazy, sick, or unproductive. European colonists used the word white to refer to people who looked like themselves and grew to become entangled with the word race and slave. And these elites created races of savage Indians, subhuman Africans, and white men. All of this direct from the Smithsonian, according to Joy Reid. I don't question what she's saying is in the Smithsonian. What he was trying to say was really just saying, do we want to teach our children to look at the color of skin again? I don't know how many times we had to press this issue. Do you want to judge someone simply by the color of their skin? Now, of course, she also brought up, well, this Jesus loves me. She said, there are likely kids in that school who aren't Christian. They don't know who Jesus is. They don't care. And their parents, who might be Buddhist or Jewish or Muslim or atheist, have a right not to have their kids' teachers preach the Jesus to them. Well, I'm going to agree with her to that extent, but at the same time, I'm going to say they also have the right to not have those teachers preach indoctrination of wokeness and transgenderism to them either. But Joy Reid doesn't want to go down that road. Let me turn you to NBA player Jonathan Isaac. He's showing his willingness to stand on the basketball court while others were kneeling. Now, as corporate America is bending its knee to the radical left in many cases, Target doing it again and losing big, as has Bud Light and others, and they seem to be buying in deeper to it, Isaac is choosing to stand up for his beliefs. He's launching an anti-woke apparel brand aimed at supporting conservative values. This is the 6'10 forward went to Twitter and used the Freedom Corporation used to undermine Christian values in the same way he is going to create an alternative. He said, you have companies that are in the field who have made a conscious decision to either attack or undermine Christian values, conservative values, things like that. And I think they have the free choice to do that, as much as I disagree, but I feel we also have the freedom to create what we want to create, and therefore he is pushing now Unite Us, UNITUS, a sports and apparel company on the basis of freedom. He said we can be proud of what we believe in. We don't have to hide or be ashamed of it. I like his approach. And it should have no bearing upon his view or anything. But Jonathan Isaac, in taking on this approach, is setting off alarm bells for many. Now, Jonathan Isaac, I'm going to tell you, again, it should have no bearing because we're trying to move past color of skin. But he is black. And he's saying we don't want to continue to do this. And the other question about pushing all this transsexual and race division and religious division, you don't see Target and Disney doing any of this in any of the Muslim worlds, do you? You know why? Because they cut their head off. That's why. They wouldn't put up with that. They don't just complain about it. They cut their heads off if you start trying to teach some of this stuff in Muslim countries. So Senator Mullen, when he finished reading this, and Bernie Sanders said, do you agree that that shouldn't be taught? He said, 1,000%. And then he moved into a question he addressed to the panel itself.
How about this? In teaching Jesus loves the little children, the lyrics go red and yellow, black and white, they're all precious in our sight. Now, which one would you think would be better? I'll ask everybody on the panel, which is better to teach? This, that is a story that was made up to teach our kids, three-year-olds who have no idea what race is, now all of a sudden is being taught that white people said this as a truth. Someone pointed me that this being a truth, that white people developed race, that white people developed that, that all of a sudden that was our word that we developed. By the way, I'm Cherokee, Native American. I think we have experienced a little bit of racism before in my life, Chairman.
The Cherokees and other Indians certainly have, and probably continue today. Joy Reid, in her blog, still trying to blast the fact that he raised this issue, said, so the answer to your silly question, Senator, the book that's best to use if you want to talk to kids about race is the actual book about race, grounded in historical fact. because trust me, kids know that race is a thing. I want to stop right there. Kids don't necessarily know race is a thing until you begin to tell them that. Have you ever just watched kids play? I mean, if you bring them together in a kindergarten and they're playing, white kid might be fighting a white kid, boy, girl, black, yellow, white, because they got a toy they want, but that's about it. It's not because of the color of their skin. That is basically injected by adults into the child's mindset. But she goes on to say, but you feel free to sing the Jesus song to your kids at home. What is wrong with that song? It says kids of all color were all precious in Jesus' sight. It is, again, another example of what can we do to basically take God out of this country, which I fight with every day. And then you have this incident that happened the other day with a kids' choir in D.C. in the Capitol Rotunda. And the story you might have heard to begin with has been rapidly changing. That's coming up.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
Any day now, any day, Napoli C will open on the streets of St. Charles, right next door to Napoli 3. You'll get lobster, crab, fish. Napoli C opening any day. But if you're in the mood for pasta, Napoli 3 is right next door. It's open for lunch and on Sundays. You can often find me at Cafe Napoli in Clayton, Town and Country, Streets of St. Charles, and any day now at Napoli C. Napoli C opening any day now.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
That was an audio clip of a piece of video that went viral over the weekend. Footage of a South Carolina-based children's choir in the Capitol Rotunda as they were singing the national anthem. The first story that came out, and we got to look at this, I always want you to keep some context in mind. I mean, I also rushed to judge. How dare they stop those kids from doing that? But here's keep this in mind. Capitol Police said the Rushing Brook Children's Choir from Greenville were stopped because of a miscommunication. They initially issued a statement that they were under the impression the group did not have permission to perform in the building, but then later clarified that they were not aware that the speaker's office had approved the performance. The choir director and another choir leader said the visit was approved by the House Speaker, and that later got confirmed. But the initial reports that went out, and the video shows the choir director leading the kids, and you see a Capitol Police officer come up to him, tap him on his shoulder, and he's listening to him, and then he just signals stop, the kids to stop. And you heard the parents and others gathered applauding for what they were able to sing. But the initial story was that the Capitol Police were absolutely going to deny the kids the right to sing in the rotunda. The statement from the Capitol Police said, and I'm going to read it directly to you. Recently, somebody posted a video of a children's choir singing the Star Spangled Banner in the U.S. Capitol building and wrongfully claimed we stopped their performance because it might offend someone. That was the original statement supposedly going around. That song might offend someone visiting our Capitol. And, of course, our reaction would be, the hell with their offense, we're going to do it anyway. This is the U.S. of A. But as I said, that's what we want to, with our gut and internal instincts, rush forward and defend. But let's get down into the actual facts and details a little bit deeper. The original thought was, according to the statement by Capitol Police, that we stopped it because it might offend someone. The Capitol Police in the statement said, here is the truth. Demonstrations and musical performances are not allowed in the U.S. Capitol. He adds in the statement, of course, the singers of this situation were children. Our officers were reasonable and allowed the children to finish their beautiful rendition of the Star-Spangled Banner. The congressional staff member who was accompanying the group knew the rules, yet lied to the officers multiple times about having permission from various offices. The staffer put both the choir and our officers, who were simply doing their job, in an awkward and embarrassing situation. That's the way the Capitol Police are wording. I haven't seen anything to contradict the fact that they got misleading information. And they said, yes, you're not allowed to do that unless you have permission. And they did have permission. I know the general concept would be you should be able to stand in our Capitol building and scream and yell the national anthem or the pledge, whatever you want to do. If that happened continuously, there would be chaos. So the idea is to try to protect some decorum and do it, but within constraints. It wasn't necessarily targeting the children, nor the song, nor the national anthem. Protocol. Maybe we need to review protocol. But remember our pledge, one nation under God.